Ask the Experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787. And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to The Growth Strategist. Aldana Ambler here, and today we're going to be talking about how do you build your business to sell. I know that sounds funny. People are saying, I'm just building it to survive. No. That's a bad mentality. That's the whole idea here. Some companies, when they're started, the owners are saying, I'm basically wanting my career. I feel like a graphic artist, and I want to be a graphic artist forever, so I'm going to incorporate myself. And that's thinking fairly small. I notice some of the people that do the best, the entrepreneurs that win the awards, et cetera, when you really interview them about what was their purpose when they started, they had the exit strategy in mind. They had the potential buyer in mind. And that whole mindset around it being a building value, that it is an enterprise that is beyond what you personally like to do, even with you or your three or four buddies that are going into business with you. If you have the end in mind, it really matters. It really changes how you behave. And I think it's a really important topic. This show is peer-to-peer-to-peer. This is, you know, the host, the guests, the listeners are CEOs of companies between 20 and 200 million. So why am I saying stuff about how do you start your business with the end in mind when you've been at this for a while? Well, the point of this is, do you have the end in mind now? I'm noticing an awful lot of CEOs of $20 million companies, they don't have the end in mind even now. And there's like a restart in their heads that I'm trying to prompt. All right, now think about this. If on a day-to-day basis all you're focusing on is survival or all you're focusing on is the next transaction or even the next phase that you might be in, that incremental from here forward thinking, I find makes executive teams, you know, accept mediocre behavior. I find that it means that there isn't enough infusion of capital. I find that, you know, from here forward thinking without really knowing what the end is creates management teams that are over their head. It creates times when your board of directors really isn't skilled at networking you at a big scale and not even looking at big options. They're not the ones that whack you up on the side of the head with the baseball bat, you know, telling you what kinds of things you should be considering, the ones that make you uneasy. You end up having friends that are going to yes you to death, maybe comfortable, but it won't necessarily build value. Hear it? So especially during, you know, challenging economic times, pause for a second today and just ask yourself, what's the end game? And if there isn't an end game of, you know, people buying you out or merging with another company or something that where you're going to cash in, you're going to, you know, you're going to really make sure that you're taken care of, what's the strategy that you're looking at? What end game are you talking about? It ends up being when somebody does something to you, when it looks like you're a candidate for acquisition and they start negotiating low price. Get it? So one of the things I'd like to observe in the beginning part of the show, what's the difference between somebody who can have the end game in mind and the pros and cons of their approach? Here's the risk. I've had over 800 clients over the years, and those of you who are longtime listeners know, my first business started 38 years ago and created six companies on an international scale. So I've got experience with this. And I'm finding that one of the risks of saying, okay, I'm going to create this business, I'm going to be selling it in 5 years, and here's the value proposition, and here's how we're going to do this. The risk of it is that there is that loss of passion. Now, we're going to have a guest on the radio show just here in a couple of minutes that doesn't sound like that. I mean, he's found the way to not have the risk proposition and the passion proposition be a problem. But I want to pose this to you. I think this is the reason that some people run from, you know, having an end game in mind is because it feels cold. It feels transactional. It feels like, you know, if that's all you're in it for is 5 years from now you're going to cash out. People have this, like, a knee-jerk reaction of, well, wait a minute. Isn't one of the advantages of being the owner of the business, isn't one of the advantages about leading a business that you have skin in the game and you have passion over and it's something you love to do and, you know, day-to-day you love going to work. And that presumption that there isn't passion and you won't have that edge because you know who you're selling to, I think is one of those double talk traps that keeps people from doing it. So let me pose that to you. Have you think about that? Is that kind of the BS that's in your head that says, I don't dare, you know, be talking about who's going to buy this because it's like selling my baby? It's going to feel, I don't know if I'm ready for that. I don't think it's an either or. The time that you're in the game, the time that you're owning the business, the time that you're involved, passion is one of the things that attracts good employees. It attracts customers. It attracts ideas. It's the endorphins that's going to make you smarter. And go full bore as long as you're there. And even if you have a presumption, a beginning, a premise that says we're going to build it to this size and sell in 5 years, nothing makes you sell until you're ready, until you get the kind of price you want. It doesn't make you have to do it, even if you have a pretty solid plan. It lets you do it. And it sounds so trite, and it sounds so, you know, almost like the social worker's talking. But that whole thing around if you have the choice and you're marching toward having a really good choice and you've given yourself some really good options, that's very exciting. It doesn't take away from the passion. The second thing about that passion trap is that the presumption that you can only have fun in the current business that you're in. Now think about the growth, think about the options for learning, think about the options of not feeling trapped. Walk through this. Most people have five careers in their life. They don't have five jobs. They have five careers nowadays. Think through one of the reasons that several companies stay plateaued, don't make the money. It's at the top of the organization, somebody got bored. They've been there, done that. They know how to do it. They've proven it before, and now they're at a maintenance level. And if your personality as a leader and as an entrepreneur is you love creating, don't you feed the passion if you know you're not going to be trapped in the maintenance scale stage of the business. You're not going to be trapped in having to manage the day-to-day. You can move on to the next cool thing you've thought of, the next thing that you've, you know, found, the next thing you've created, the next thing that, you know, is possible to keep you alive. Listen to the wording. Keeps you alive. Now, having that image that you're not going to get trapped in boredom, you're not going to let yourself get to, you know, do the things that you really don't want to do anyway, having an idea that in 5 years, 6 years, I'm not trapped on 5 years, but, you know, whatever years it is, 3 to 5 years, you know, you're looking to sell, I find helps the presidents and the CEOs and the owners of companies because it makes them look outside. Instead of fretting and micromanaging about who is the teller in our bank, or who is the supervisor over the Wichita operation? If you know you're looking for your next thing, if you know you're looking for what's going to keep you alive and fresh and passionate, you have your head up off the desk and out of the, you know, the minutia of a meeting, which is where your company needed you to be anyway. The leader of the business needs to be looking at market dynamics, needs to be looking at technology trends, needs to be looking at how money works in the world. You know, is this the day, is this the year that you should be going after growth financing through a bank, through a venture capitalist, through a private investor, through, you know, a different kind of capital call? Are you going to ask those questions if your image is you're in this business forever, you're in this role forever, you don't really have to learn very much? See it? So having the end game in mind can feed your passion, can remind you, can push you in an externally oriented direction in the first place, which is where your company needs you to be, even if you are going to be there for 20 years. It needs you to be, your business needs you to be externally focused, not internally trapped. Those are the phrases I want you to hear, externally focused versus internally trapped. Now, why looking externally does that help you? Think about how many $20 million, you know, CEOs of $20 million companies. Here's what a lot of you guys are doing. This is the feedback I get from, this is the fifth year of the radio show. This is the kind of feedback I get. Several of you listen to the show late at night. You're sitting at the laptop doing your last round of email, and you load this for, you know, continuing education. And one of the reasons that you're doing it after the spouse and the kids are asleep is that you don't even have the time to go to a seminar. But you got a lot of problems. You got things you're going online to learn the answers to. Is the CFO that you hired the controller that you've hired going to be good enough to be a CFO? Are you ready to bring in venture capital? But oh my goodness, that's terrible because they would want a seat on your board. What board? You know, you have the house over on the hill overlooking the lake, the kids' tuition's paid off, and you drive a nice car. Why would you want the nonsense of the next phase? You know you know how to be a president, but you're concerned you can't be a CEO. You got a lot in your mind. And think about how internally directed those questions are. Get it? So if you shift right now and focus on, all right, who might we sell to? Who's going to be interested in buying this thing? Where is their synergy? Would they be buying the product? Would they be buying our accounts? Would they be buying the whole thing? Who goes with it? Because you personally wouldn't go with the deal. You could for a couple of years. A lot of times the buyouts have these 2 and 3 year periods of time that often end up crashing down to 1 year because, you know, the relationship needs to be kind of consummated in 1 year. All right. If you don't even know the answer to that question, kind of look up from your computer and ask yourself, what's the exit strategy to free you up right now to start considering your job as an externally focused leader? Not to rush to your next thing, but to see the next thing. And your next thing may be in conjunction with the existing business. Your next thing might be a joint venture or a spinoff or a piggyback from your current company. It doesn't have to be that you dive into the deep end without any swimming lessons. Nobody said you had to do it today. In fact, the idea I'm talking about lifts you into options instead of forces you to stay. And the really bright people I know, they're going to be looking at something sooner or later anyway. If it's because they got bored and they let go, they go through a beating up of the people that they're with, knowing where you're going to be selling and thinking about the release actually helps you to be ever more present in the moment and appreciate the people you're with. You're not going to be in the way of their promotion. People can see the upward mobility because they can tell you're looking on. In my case, for example, it was a whole lot easier going through a 33-person ESOP over 7 years to make sure that the consultancy that was international with six offices. That lift, everybody knowing that they had skin in the game and they were going to continue, permitted me to get into venture capital, permitted me to get into another company in Hong Kong, permitted me to look for other things. Are you mentally trapping yourself, or are you mentally releasing yourself? After the break, we're going to hear somebody that's lived this journey. We'll be right back.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. The experts are here. Voice America Business Network.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the growth strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjoy Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjoy Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business. market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and each week we rotate through different growth strategies with various industries, different geographic locations. And this week I'm cheating a little bit. I got to tell you, to me, this is almost like growth strategy number one. I'd like you to have the end game in mind and the idea of build the business to sell. I mean, it sounds like I'm a heretic saying it, but I got to tell you, it would help, I think, the overwhelming majority of companies get past plateaus to resolve their issues related to day-to-day minutia, profitability, you name it, and worry and fretting about recessions and such. It just is very freeing. I don't know why the business schools aren't emphasizing it more. On that much of a platform here, let me introduce my guest. Scott, you there?
I am, Aldana.
Hi. Now let's talk about your journey. Scott Klosowski. You're gonna hear this guy's name. He's out on the speaking circuit now, so you know, check him out and see what he's talking about. You've been living this journey for a while. I mean, when you were 25 years old, weren't you creating like computer stores?
Yeah, the first thing that I did after I'd worked my way up through a company was I bought away their computer department and just started opening computer stores across three states. And
so that was, you were gutsy at 25. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, gutsy, or I just didn't know any better.
Did you have the end game in mind even at 25?
You know, I didn't. And I think that first one, the lessons I took away from that are probably what taught me to make sure that I had the end game in mind, because being the first thing I ever started, all I thought about was, gee, you know, how can I build a company that I could run, and how could I make it bigger?
Yeah.
And that was all I ever thought about. And then, you know, it went up, and, you know, I think I built it up to about 12 stores.
In one year?
That was in the late 80s.
Yeah, but one year, because by age 26, you were already founding, you know, your next venture, Paragraph, right?
I actually did that at the same time.
How many stores did you get to, and what happened? Did you have to close them, sell them, what? What happened?
Yeah, I ended up having to close them all. So I built it up, and we probably were doing about $40 million a year in revenue. And then the whole paradigm of computer stores started to, at least the franchise stores, started to really go backwards. And I ended up holding on to it too long. And so by the time I actually was able to sell it, there wasn't that much left.
So the aha was somewhat learned the hard way, huh?
It absolutely was learned the hard way.
Yeah. And, well, you know, you'd like to have somebody else learn. You know, they all get excited. They go, oh, he's up at $40 million. But you could have lost your shirt, and, you know, you get really old going through something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the lesson it taught me was clearly that you need to know what you're trying to accomplish. In trying to accomplish is not just, hey, I want to build something that's profitable,
mm-hmm.
Or that I want to build something that's $50 million. I mean, you have to have more of a goal than just that. I mean, you really do have to understand, you know, what's the end game of why I'm even building this thing? What do I have to
accomplish?
I think
that's the test of resilience. You know, if you couldn't have a buyer and it wasn't going to be for a profitable pull, then it's not resilient.
Yeah.
All right, so while you're in the 25 computer store mentality, hadn't closed them, et cetera, you had an idea with Paragraph. Tell us about the joint venture. This is so cool. You got to hear this, listeners.
Oh, you know, it's funny. I had read an article that said that that what you should do is build one small business that's local, mm-hmm. and then in the next part of your career, take it national, and in the next part of your career, go international.
Well, 20 years ago, that was the idea.
Yeah, so having read that, I thought, well, gee, you know, shouldn't I try to do that all at one time? Because I was a technology guy, I thought, well, you know, what could I do with technology internationally? And I looked around at different countries, and I thought, you know, there's no sense trying to go compete in areas that might be too big for me to try, like Japan. But since my name is Russian, mm-hmm. I started looking at the Soviet Union, and nobody was going to the Soviet Union, and actually found a Wall Street article about a peace committee that was going to take 10 business people over to the Soviet Union and try to see if they could start businesses with Soviets.
I remember that.
As a way to try to foster peace.
Yeah.
And so I actually got into that group and was one of the 10 companies they took over there.
Too cool.
So that was how I ended up. And I ended up being, I think, the only one that really put together a joint venture with the Soviet government. And
see, now, but that's what I'm saying in the opening of the show here, because if somebody's so lost in minutia worrying if their controller can be promoted to CFO, blah, 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 they don't even notice that there's a trade mission or a peace committee or any of that to go over to the Soviet Union, or you pick your country now, it doesn't matter. You wouldn't have gone, you know? If your head's down, you can't see it.
Yeah, no question.
So now, what did you do? I mean, what was paragraph? I mean, I see it's related to the chess champion, Garry Kasparov. I mean, what happened? What did you do?
Well, we actually gathered up a lot of technology that had been developed in the Soviet Academy of Sciences, all software technology, and we started licensing that software in the West. I mean, in Japan, in Germany, in the United States. In fact, the first handheld, Apple's Newton,
right.
We licensed the handwritten text recognition software for that. So we really were just taking Soviet kind of intelligentsia and licensing it in the West.
Wow. Okay, so now did you have somebody to sell it to in mind then?
That time, yes. I mean, I knew immediately that what I wanted to do was go get venture funding for that, and that I wanted to build it up for a few years and sell it.
How big did it get?
Boy, we ended up, I think, it probably had about 60, 70 programmers, and was doing some millions of dollars in businesses and or in business and on its way up when I sold to the venture capital guys.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how over how many years and you sold it to the VCs?
4 years.
Okay.
From start to when I sold. They sold half of it 5 years after that, and then sold the last half 5 years after that.
Now, I know this sounds like ancient history because it's like 20 years ago, but the whole idea of this is you learned through the ventures and being a serial entrepreneur, you know, getting ready to sell. Do you remember back, what did you learn those 4 years? Do you remember what it felt like?
Well, I learned about pace.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that, you know, if you're going to build something up to have a value that's fairly substantial so that when you make a sale you're proud of what you accomplished, that there's a pace that you have to move at, that's probably a little faster, harsher pace than what you do if you're just trying to build with no end in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly I learned about pacing. I learned that, you know, you really need to identify who might be the people that you want to sell to.
Yeah. You don't have time to have, you know, kind of a slow marketing manager or somebody that can't get production figured out. You got to go for stars, I would imagine.
Right. I mean, you basically have to put a strategy in place where you know what the next 12 steps are. In fact, you probably know all the steps through to having the value that you want to sell. And then, you know, as part of that, you want to really have identified who the potential buyer is going to be.
Now, did you find the venture capitalist sitting on your boards helpful or a pain in the butt? Or both?
Both. I've venture funded now, I think, 4 companies, and so I have a lot of experience with it. I think I've raised probably, I think, over $36 million in venture capital now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my experience is it's both. I mean, they're helpful because they're on the same side of the table, and so they're wanting to guard their investment, which also happens to be my investment.
Right.
You know, they can be a pain because, you know, they typically are not shy about expressing their opinions, and they're not worried about your ego, and so, you know, at times they can be tough to live with.
Mm-hmm. But I just find that those kind of questions are the type of thing you want the CEO of a company to be asking anyway. And if they don't have that provocative board who has some skin in the game, some of those questions don't get answered. Too easy to avoid it, not talk about it, duck it, you know, hang on to a manager you should have let go, hire the cousin that should never have been hired, you know?
No question. I learned that early. I assembled a board for one of the early companies that I built, and I invited some people from New York to be on the board, and you know, bankers and some pretty high-powered people that were not friends of mine. I mean, they were just people that I had met. And I remember the first board meeting I had with them. I walked in and I had this agenda of all these things that I was getting ready to do.
Right.
And they basically said no to almost all of them. And it was the first time anyone had ever said no to me in one of my businesses.
That's, you know, in the opening I didn't get to it. The second fear people have is that they actually have someone else that can tell them no. And the image that a lot of people have is owning their own business is that nobody can tell them no. And, but, you know, a business doesn't grow based on, you know, your arrogance or your, you know, assuming that everything you're going to do is right and it's only what you want to do. But that's a hard, that's a harsh lesson for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. And, but I have to say, at the end of the day, it, you know, as good as I think I might be as a business person, I can look back at, boy, I'll bet 90% of the things that a board said no to me on, and I would say they were right.
Yeah.
A
lot of my
clients
do the same thing.
I say that, but it's true.
Now, how did you come up with, I think the next company was Webcast. Am I saying that right?
Right.
How did that overlap the time that you were in the previous one, Paragraph, or did it?
I had sold Paragraph to the venture capital guys, and then I actually spent probably about a year and a half helping H.R. Haldeman write his diaries.
Wow.
Of the Nixon era. And then when I was done with that project, which was kind of off the beaten path, I went back and started what became Webcast, so another technology company.
So, you know, you network at a real low level, right? You know, you would know the former chief of staff of a president.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that became because of the Soviet Union. When I was just traveling back and forth to the Soviet Union, I started to get a lot of press about what I was doing, and long and short was I ended up on the board of a company that had, you know, some people like H.R. Haldeman and Buzz Aldrin and some other folks.
Mm-hmm. But now, see, one of the reasons that that's important to say on the show is I find that the entrepreneurs that are serial entrepreneurs that are building to sell, they're networking. And who they're talking with and who they're, you know, emailing and what cocktail parties they go to matter. You know, they tend to be the ones that are around the movers and shakers. And the first time an idea comes up, it may sound crazy, but so what? They stay in the game. They're going to be going back. And they had that type of, you know, social network, intellectual stimulation, right?
Yeah.
It matters. We're going to, now, I'm up for a break here. I want to know a little bit about what Webcast did. Did you know who you were going to sell it to, and how long did you have it? Because I think, wasn't that the one that you sold for $115 million?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be right back with our serial entrepreneurs, Scott Kozlowski. And you put this on. Try this image on for yourself. This is the Growth Strategist, Donna Ambler. We'll be right back.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjoy Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjoy Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
Adding fractions is nothing.
For real?
Look, these are denominators. You multiply this one so that it's the same as that, then you add them up.
Man, that's easy.
Charles Bennett dreamed of returning to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without money for college, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A message from the UNCF and the Ad Council.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and we're on the line with Scott Klosowski. And I want to speed up the history here because the current stuff is interesting. I mean, this is the guy that's a serial entrepreneur, that maybe the third enterprise was sold for $115 million in stock in 2000. And then you go to the next one, and it's iBeam Broadcasting Corporation, and you quickly read through this, and you go produce $40 million of business to become one of the industry's leading streaming communications solutions provider. And then you look at Critical Technologies, where he served as the vice president, and then up to where you are now. You're a founding partner of iThrive. Tell me a little bit about what iThrive does and who's going to buy it.
Well, iThrive is a pretty sophisticated business plan. So it is an online banking system.
Cool.
And it's basically a second generation. So if you think about what we do today with online banking, this is a whole new generation of software that provides lots of capabilities you don't see today. And one of those is that it has embedded in it the ability to teach financial literacy. And it does that demographically. So we're the first ones to provide online banking for kids.
Pretty cool.
So kids 5 years old up to 24 years old have their own flavors of online banking that allow them to manage real accounts and real money, and then also teach financial literacy. And we license this system to banks and credit unions.
Gotcha.
But we went further. We took a version of iThrive, and we created iThrive Professor, which is a free version that we let schools and teachers use. And so schools around the country are going to start using iThrive Professor as a way to teach the life skill of financial literacy in schools.
Not that it's needed much, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. Especially we've seen...
But you like timely things, huh, Scott?
Right. We've seen what happened when people don't understand how to buy mortgages, for example. So anyway, it's kind of a neat deal because what we're seeing is that there will, in the next few years, be millions of kids that run iThrive Professor in school,
mm-hmm.
which will teach them how to run the real iThrive banking system when they go to a bank or credit union to open an account.
All right, now I want to go back to something related to the listeners. Okay, so the first one's about computer stores. The next, the second one is software related, but it's got a Russian United States twist to it. Next one, is a... The book related to Haldeman, the next one is webcast interactive marketing, and next one is, I mean, there's a thread here of technology, but what you can hear is you can tell what a timely opportunity and that there's an unmet market need. This is more the skill that you've developed over the years?
Yeah, it's just over-the-horizon vision. I mean, mm-hmm. technology is my field, but within technology, I'll always do many different things in many different spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think what I've gotten good at is being able to just look over the horizon a few years and say, all right, where is there a hole in the market?
Mm-hmm.
Or where is there that a new technology is going to radically change the game? And so let me get in it earlier than everybody else.
See, your mindset, though, over the years becomes, I'm not a guy who owns computer stores looking for a problem.
No.
You know, it's more of you're looking for a problem or an opportunity, and you can pull together the team and the various, you know, between the finances and the people and the stuff, you can pull something together to address it and then go to your next thing. And that's the career change I'm trying to get people to listen to on these shows, is there, what is your job as the CEO and the president of a business? Is that mindset of don't get attached to your solution. It's like a bad game of Jeopardy. You know, so right now, you know, you're still not even describing it as that your expertise is in financial literacy and software for banks. That's what one of your current companies does, but that doesn't define who you are.
No, it's my observation that decades ago, you didn't have to pay attention to trends nearly as much. They exhibited themselves much slower.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could say, well, I want to be a banker.
Right.
And you could be a banker for 40 or 50 years. But in the current economy, and I think the economy going forward, mm-hmm. trends exhibit themselves so much faster that you can't make that kind of call.
Right.
In other words, you could say you want to be a banker today, mm-hmm. but there really is not a need for bankers in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really study trends nowadays, and you have to be aware of what direction the trends are going.
Mm-hmm. So now who's going to be the buyer for this company?
Oh, it will be one of the large banking software companies, I'm sure. There are companies in the space like Fidelity and Fiserv, Jack Henry, Metavante,
right.
Quicken. You know, so there's probably a dozen companies that are in the
right.
banking financial space.
But how do you accidentally on purpose, they're kind of like competitors, how do you accidentally on purpose keep them informed about what you're doing so that they're tantalized and interested in buying you when you want them to?
Well, there's two ways we're doing it. I mean, one is we get invited on stage at industry events to show what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so since we're the only ones doing kids online banking in the country,
mm-hmm.
We get on stage easily. And
yeah.
so they all see us and mm-hmm. are aware of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing we do is we try to partner with them. I mean, I always try to partner mm-hmm. with organizations that I would like to acquire me.
Yeah, it sounds funny, but the co-opetition really helps.
Sure. I mean, there's no sense making enemies out of them. I mean, I'd much rather sell through them, be partners with them, work with them,
mm-hmm.
So that they're getting to know us, they know our product really well. That just enhances your ability to sell to them.
For a lot of my clients, it's a way for them to find out who they can trust, and if the logic behind deals, they can't treat you, you know, decently as a subcontractor or as a, you know, a distributor, then, you know, when they go to the negotiation to buy you, it's going to get ugly. It's very the culture of a company, you can tell. From one relationship to the next, does that have you found that too?
Oh, I have, no question. I mean, I'd much rather have been partners with a company who then makes an offer than to be total strangers and they make an offer.
Mm-hmm. So
especially,
now I'm just learning. I mean, this has been like 20 some years you've been doing this, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, what's the biggest challenge for you? Is it the creation of the teams? Is it the finding of the money? What?
Boy, at this point, it isn't the creation of the team or the capital. I mean, I've been successful enough that it's not hard to get capital.
Yeah, but you must have had some crummy business partners in the world. I can't believe in 20 years you didn't have a partner issue.
Oh, I mean, no question. I mean, when assembling the team, there's two parts to the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one is who your partners are. The other one is who's the staff or
right.
who are the employees. Assembling a team to get the company off the ground from a partnership level is treacherous because
yeah.
you very much are bonding with somebody else or somebody's else for a multi-year project with a lot of risk. And
yeah. Especially when you start making the kind of money that you've been making. Did you have some, I mean, don't name names, but have you had some experience in the 20 years with someone who gets greedy or lazy or, their strategic vision is so different and you have this, okay, do I buy them out or kick them out?
You know, I did. Probably the second company that I ever did, I went and formed it with two partners that I didn't know that well, but they were high-powered guys, one from New York and one from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first told them what I wanted to do, they loved the idea, so we all got a third of the company and took off.
Mm-hmm.
And we all had agreed to what each partner would put into it. And, of course, we weren't a year into it. I was doing 80% of the work, and they were probably each doing 10% of the work, so it was unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we started to become really successful. And the more successful we became, they began to be a little bit greedy about how we treated other people. And,
I've had that happen, and a lot of my clients have. That's why I asked it. So you have a secret to the people who are listening about what happens when you're successful and one of your partners gets greedy. Any secrets to fixing that? What do you do?
Well, I think the trick is two things. One, you have to pick your partners well. I mean, you can't just pick partners based on are they famous or are they successful or the things we typically pick them on. I think you have to pick your partners based on their ethics and morals. And
I know it sounds funny, but I have what I call a 6 iced tea process. If I haven't sat down over iced tea with my potential partner for 6 times, making the decisions too soon. You know what I mean? Because you can't hear how they make decisions about contracts or what's their philosophy of employees or what are their real goals money-wise. If you do it after one appointment, how are you going to know that?
Yeah, I think you have to know them really well. I think the other thing you have to do is you very much have to reduce to writing exactly what each other's responsibilities are going to be and exactly how the percentages in the organization can change, because people's lifestyles change. You know, you can have a partner and they get divorced, or you can have a partner and they have a change of life. And
have you had the attorneys have to help you with, you know, in case of disaster and the key man insurance and yada yada, and they pose the contingency plan for if something happens?
The more contingency plans, the more planning you do up front, I think the better you're going to have as far as a partnership.
Mm-hmm. I resisted that early on, and I found that the attorneys were helpful to me, you know, posing, okay, if somebody's spouse dies, if they get sick, I mean, here's the criteria, and you live through that, and then you got a template you can use for your fourth or your fifth enterprise.
Right, and there's a reason the attorneys know about this.
You know, isn't that telling? It's truly telling. Okay, now, you know, so picking a partner would be one of the key things. Tell me something else that in this journey you've had with 4, 5, 6 companies here, what other skill set have you had to develop over the 20 years?
Well, I think that, you know, we've had to build a skill set of just being able to execute really well and being very harsh about having a strategy and executing against that strategy, again, at a rapid pace. You know,
do you think you get rid of people faster that are non-performers than other folks?
Absolutely. But I think you do everything a bit faster. I mean, I think, we know that we want to try to sell the company within 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And so when you know that that's what you're doing, then you have to have created the value or created at least some large chunk of value within 3 to 5 years. And
are you a hire slow, fire fast guy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, and what happens with, I guess I got another break here. You know what I want to know? I want to know how you manage your time. What are you busy doing? Like, what's the rhythm of your work? So we'll be right back with Scott Pazoski, and he's going to tell us, how do you manage the rhythm of your work when you're building to sell? The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ampler. We'll be right back.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Mom?
Dad?
How long long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens?
Will you come get me?
Should I stay where I am and wait for you? Or go to Grandma's house since it's closer?
Shouldn't we pick a place to meet?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
How do we keep in touch with each other if the phones don't work?
Should I be worried how we all get home?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Waste Management, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. 5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking with Scott Klosowski. Am I saying your name right?
You are. Perfect.
I want to make sure I say it right. On the idea of build to sell, you know, do you have in you to be a serial entrepreneur? And right before the break, I asked him how he manages his schedule. And before he starts talking about that, I want to make sure, Scott, that you give some contact information for our listeners who want to talk with you further, give you ideas. How do they reach you?
Oh, well, my website is just klosowski.com, K-L-O-S-O-S-K-Y.
Okay.
And you can always contact me directly through the website or just at scott@klosowski.com.
Either way. Good. And if people know my name, they know how to get me. The email is Aldana, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at Ambler, A-M-B-L-E-R.com. And in the United States, the toll-free number is 1-888-ALDONA, A-L-D-O-N-N-A. I just have six companies, too many telephone numbers, and if you're dealing directly with me, that's the number you get. Now, the idea of how do you manage your time, because one of the things I'm thinking about is the distinction between who you are as, you know, what are you, chairman of the board now of iThrive?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, which part of your looking for opportunities is on behalf of that organization versus Scott is this, you know, serial entrepreneur checking out the next thing. And I find for myself, I'm kind of interject this, you know, with the multiple companies, and then I'm an intermediary, so I screen a lot of deals for a group of private investors, 13 guys that have some money that want to have it. If it passes the Aldana test, then they're willing to look at it. So I'm always looking at deals, and so I have to screen them with a list of like 15 questions. You know, does the timing make sense of this, and does it? You know, are we so late in the process that it's really not worth our talking about and junk like that? And the top two deals go in front of these guys to consider. So we have a pretty formal process, but I find a lot of serial entrepreneurs don't necessarily have that, and they have a lot jammed in their head. Now you sound like a guy that has a system. How do you manage your time?
Well, two different questions there. So the system, I would say, a lot of entrepreneurs are very instinctual.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a breed, we're instinctual. And so I think that's why you end up with entrepreneurs that don't have a system.
Sure.
And I think I was like that when I was young. I did everything by instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, a decent percentage of the time my instincts were right. The problem was they weren't always right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, later on, you know, I built more of a formal process where when I need to vet ideas, You know, there's a list of filters I ask myself, just like you mentioned, is the timing really right for this? Who are the customers? Do the customers really have money to pay?
Mm-hmm.
How much does it cost to actually get revenue? What kind of return on investment can I get from this type of project?
Yeah.
And then there are people around me that I will bounce this off of and get their opinion. And, you know, I won't anymore launch off on a project without running that idea through a lot of filters before I go invest time and energy into it.
But you're right, because sometimes when you do the due diligence too soon, you kind of lose the excitement about the initial idea.
Yep.
You know, especially if someone else is sitting there pitching the idea to you, and if you sound like, you know, the VC is going, well, you know, show me how I can get five times net, you know, blah, 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 you know, and it just kind of kills the energy. So you got to be careful not to dampen your own energy.
Yep. Now, the other question about managing time.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I mean, I'm a keynote speaker, so I'm on the speaker circuit. I've got iThrive responsibilities. I've got consulting work. I have, you know, always thinking about the next idea and people that bring ideas to me.
Mm-hmm.
So managing time is a, you know, it's a difficult thing because there's never as much time as I wish there was to do everything I would love to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose at my age, you know, at 46,
mm-hmm.
what I've learned so far is that, first of all, I got to draw a line between personal and business time.
Yep.
And so I've learned that it doesn't make sense to destroy my marriage or destroy a relationship with my kids in order to invest more and more and more in businesses, no matter how much fun it is to do the business. So
but we're
very
similar, though. It sounds like the things that you're doing, there's a synergy between it, you know. The radio show introduces me to really bright execs that, you know, sometimes need money or they have another idea. And the speeches that you and I do introduce us to, it kind of raises the bar to have to prepare to talk to people about trends and things, and it helps you.
Oh, you bet.
You know?
You bet. Yeah, everything I do seems to be pretty synergistic.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. I mean, speaking, you know, lets me speak about my latest venture in front of thousands of people, which just promotes it, you know. So I love that there's a lot of synergy. But I think, you know, managing time, especially when you're building to sell something and you're at such a high pace,
mm-hmm.
is difficult because, you know, there's certainly a big reward when you can build a company fast and sell it for millions of dollars, and that's so it gets attractive to want to invest a ton of time in doing that.
Are you real involved with day-to-day operations of anything at this point?
You know, I was very involved with iThrive for the first year.
Right.
Then one of my partners took over as CEO, and then we started bringing in full-time staff, and so then I slowly, over the next 6 months after that first year, started to back out of it.
That seems to be one of the important time management issues is, you know, somebody early on makes sure that the execution's making sense, but they extricate themselves because otherwise the new ideas aren't going to happen and the external focus isn't going to happen.
Right, and that's what I did. I mean, I got it off the ground, the hard part. The first year, got the team assembled, got the capital put behind it, got the product in development,
mm-hmm.
You know, evangelized it, all the, you know, early evangelizing of the idea.
Right, right.
So I did that, and then, you know, we brought in a team to really take it and execute on the business plan.
Yep. Now, what kind of ideas are you on the lookout for now? Do you have a sense of which problems you want to attack, or are you just open, like a sponge, taking it in?
No, I think pretty specifically, I'm real intrigued with how we're using the Internet to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ideas that I'm playing with now are all around new types of web tools
mm-hmm.
That we can use to communicate
mm-hmm.
In different forms of that. So there's a real specific problem I'm interested in solving, which is that we now have all kinds of ways to communicate. We've got Skype and cell phone and Twitter and email, right? We probably have a dozen different ways we can.
It's kind of like years ago when we had to figure out if WordPerfect or Word was going to win.
Right. So we have all these ways, and I think it isn't so much that maybe any one will win as we're always going to have a half dozen that any one of us use,
mm-hmm.
but there's nothing that controls that half dozen. In other words,
right.
I can't go anywhere to see what Aldana's using to communicate with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somebody could easily build a piece of web-based technology where I could go to Aldana's name and then see a list of all the ways you communicate, what your preferences are, what your current status is.
I was just
is.
Thinking the word preferences would be a big one because some of us feel kind of stuck having to use 10 different ways and it's actually cumbersome.
Right. So that's I'm real intrigued with the fact that we've got powerful new ways to communicate with each other, but we don't really have good ways to control or help each other understand how to communicate with each other.
Now, last piece of advice, I've got 1 minute. And, you know, you're thinking of peers that are in your role. And most of the listeners, they're between 20 and 200 million. and they want to lift their head off the, you know, from looking down at the desk to become more externally focused, what would you tell them?
I think you have to consciously invest a certain percentage of your time. I think that's the answer. Just like Google tells employees that you know, that they almost mandate that they spend 10 to 20% of their time kind of doing R&D in whatever field they're in.
Yep, good place to start. Scott, you were a wonderful guest. I appreciate your time. And my wish for everybody, as it is every week, is for accelerated growth with sustained profitability. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.